right, well, good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Today is April 8th, and this is our last scheduled hearing for this session and actually for this term. So exciting times. We're coming to an inflection point in our legislative session here today. So members, as you know, yesterday we heard public testimony on our omnibus bill, House File 4706, and we're going to continue that process today. But first, I would ask Ms. Niedernhofer to please take the roll.
Lupin.
Present.
Hewitt.
Present.
Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
Ackland.
Ackland, present.
Becker.
Becker, present.
Bonner.
Present.
Bierman.
Bierman, present.
Bolden.
Bolden, present.
Damuth.
Present.
Freiberg.
Present.
Grinhagen.
Present.
Heal.
Present.
Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Munson. Munson. Pryor.
Pryor, present.
Quam.
Present.
Ryan.
Present.
Schultz.
McDonald,
present.
Wolgamott. Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
A quorum is present.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Niedernhofer. So I did not prearrange for someone to move the minutes. Would a member want to make a motion to move the minutes of April 7th, yesterday?
So moved.
Madam Chair, I will so move. Sorry.
Wonderful.
Sorry, Mike.
Multiple takers. Okay. I think Representative Freiberg, Chair Freiberg, moves the minutes of April 7th for review. Is there any discussion to those minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes of April 7th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Thank you very much. So we are working on House File 4706, and at the end of the last meeting, House File 4706 was laid over. So now I will move that House File 4706 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and then I will move the DE amendment that is coded A220419. So this is the amendment that makes the bill into the bill we all think we're working on, and so I would ask that members, I'm going to move to adopt that amendment first, and then we'll be working off that amendment and taking amendments to that. So all in favor of adoption of the DE amendment coded A220419, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So thank you for that. So we are now working off the House File 4706 as amended. And we will proceed then to take amendments on the bill. So the first amendment I'm going to move is the author's amendment, and that is the A9 amendment. And let me just get those papers here. And I'm gonna. So what I'm gonna do, members, is explain the A9 amendment, which is the author's amendment, and then we're going to ask our fiscal staff to do a quick walkthrough of the spreadsheet just to note what changes are made to the spreadsheet so everyone's on the same page. And let me start by saying that every omnibus I've ever seen has an author's amendment, probably multiple author's amendments, because these are very complex bills, and a lot of the changes that I'll walk you through quickly are technical changes, conforming changes, things that we thought were in there that weren't in there when bill was assembled, and that kind of thing. So these are, so just walking you through this quickly then. So on the author's amendment, the A9, we've got line 1.3 to 1.6 are technical changes in the health professional education loan forgiveness program and a clinical healthcare training grant program. 1.4 to 1.5 make some other modifications, the percentage of public healthcare program patients receiving sliding fee discounts that a mental health provider must see in order to be eligible for a supervision grant. And I believe this was meant to make this bill workable. 1.8 to 2.8 is changes some language that allows the Commissioner of Health to issue a grant to organizations that would include the University of Minnesota post-secondary educational institutes to make sure that they are actually organizations that can provide this services for international medical graduates. 2.9 to 2.10 make technical changes. 2.11 to 3.25 is a section on the school-based health centers bill, language that was left out inadvertently, and it provides grants for oral health in school settings and to settings that use the whole school, whole community, whole child model. Line 3.26 is in Representative Hewitt's mortuary science bill, and it just changes the fee amount for transfer care specialists. Then we have a technical change, 3.27 to 0.28. 3.29 to 4.2 changes application fees and registration renewal fees for medical cannabis manufacturer registration. 4.3 to 4.10 is technical changes clarifying language. 4.11 to 4.22 is adding some authority the Commissioner of Health needs to establish a lead service line inventory grant program. More technical changes on the next couple of lines, 4.23 to 4.24, 4.25 to 5.28, and 6.1 to 6.3 takes out some language that the department is still working on with stakeholders and all parties agree is not ready, and they'll continue working on that. Lines 5.29 to 5.30 is part of the tribal medical cannabis program and conforms with the section making a similar change in the finance article. 6.4 to 6.8 increases the MA asset limit for elderly and persons with disabilities effective January 1st, 2025. This is something we heard testimony about yesterday that they very much wanted to have these asset limits changed and we're able to add that to the bill. 6.9 to 6.12 changes the some dates for the spend down limit. That's what I was just speaking of. So it changes it from July 1st to January 1st, so makes it happen a little bit earlier. Line 6.13 to 6.15 changes an effective date for the MA adult dental coverage to match the tracking. 6.16 to 6.17 provides an effective date for state-only payments for the children's hospice provider. That's the Representative Ryer's bill, and that's to match the tracking. 6.18 to 6.20 is another effective date change for the MA nicotine and tobacco cessation services to match the tracking there. 6.21 to 10.2 is the governor's proposal on client error overpayment. This was a policy-only bill that was inadvertently dropped. Anyway, it's to match the tracking. Maybe it does have some fiscal impact. Sorry about that. 10.3 to 10.5 adds language that was inadvertently dropped related to MA and clinical trials. 10.6 to 10.7 is technical corrections. 10.8 to 10.19 is a section to extend the DHS COVID-19 waiver for the background study requirements until January 1st to 2023. I know this is important to a lot of folks, and we had inadvertently left this out of the initial draft. The remainder of the amendment, line 10.2 to 17.1, is mainly technical and modifies appropriation numbers to conform with the spreadsheet, makes technical changes recommended by the revisor, modifying and clarifying rider language, et cetera. And then line 11.12 to 11.26 adds two riders for the Department of Human Services appropriations. One is about expanding the accessibility and capacity of online tools for people receiving services and direct support workers. And one is to implement the system critical incident review process. And then we have the rest 13.25 to 16.12 and 16.17 to 16.22, some health department riders to the correct budget activity. So I'm practicing my speed talking as well. Are there any questions on any of that? All right, seeing none then, I'm gonna move to adopt the author's amendment so we can get the bill in the proper shape. And so all in favor of adoption of the A9 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, the amendment is adopted. And members, I should have actually had Mr. Harney go through the change of the spreadsheet, but I will do that now, even though we adopted the amendment. But Mr. Harney, if you would go ahead and Mr. Burke, thank you very much. Go ahead and go through the changes.
Hey, Madam Chair, or Joe, do you want to start and I'll just scroll it through it?
Yeah, Doug, Mr. Berg, could you take the first item, family and community resource hubs? I believe that's...
Oh, yeah. The first thing is on page 8 of the spreadsheet. We'll go through very briefly. It's all the changes are highlighted in blue. In the DHS family and community resource hubs initiative, there is a deletion of some FTEs that were at other agencies than DHS, so those came out. The next one is
on page 11, Mr. Berg. Yep, right here. So, Madam Chair, members, there are numerous bills that the committee heard and that were in the bill on April 6th that set aside grants for mental health provider supervision. This change simply is moving some of the governor's appropriations proposed to the Representative Bain section under her codification of that down below.
There were in the increasing health insurance affordability section of the governor's and our Minnesota Care Public Option, there was an adjustment of the numbers in both of those per instructions from the department. This matches the riders that we were carrying. We did not have all the money in for the governor's initiative for a piece that we were carrying, and then there was just some minor adjustments to the public option piece.
Madam Chair, members, the next item to draw your attention to that change is on page 18. Here we have a correction from the department as to the appropriate FFP for the delivery reform analysis report, as well as, like Mr. Berg and I said on Wednesday, a refinement of the MAXS income standard being tethered to 133% of federal poverty line. That is just reflected here. Next, Madam Chair, members, two items mentioned on Wednesday that are now shown on the spreadsheet is the Representative Olson shelter-linked mental health grants bill that was in the Chair Gomez committee report, as well as the Representative Herr income asset limitation cost in the division report.
And we got some fiscal notes in, and so we were able to refine from an estimated number to the correct numbers for House File 4062, the MA coverage of a children's hospice. And the same happened for House File 3854, the HIV prevention PEP and PrEP bill. Those are fiscal note numbers now. And for House File 3958, the MA coverage of seizure detection devices. There was a change to the estimation of the additional FMAP savings we have to take into the change to the Healthcare Access Fund from that item, which was added to the sheet.
Madam Chair, under addressing growing health care costs on line 907 is a reduction from the governor's position to offset the cost shown in the Chair Schultz Healthcare Affordability Board.
Sorry if people are seasick from my scrolling too fast, but we're almost done here.
And I think lastly, the few items on page 30, Tribal Medical Cannabis Board and Program reflect the fiscal note cost as amended in the author's amendment. The next item is the Representative Vane Mental Health Professionals Grant and Loan Forgiveness Program. The amounts here entered offset the governor's set-asides in that appropriation. Healthcare affordability costs at the Department of Health are in from a fiscal note submitted between Wednesday and now. We received additional items to the Representative Gomez bill for the medical cannabis manufacturer expansion, that state government special revenue fund. Further refinement was provided from the department via a fiscal note for the Representative Olson nurse staffing. And then lastly, just a technical fix for the cost to administer Representative Hewitt's local and tribal public health appropriation. This is the cost, direct cost per the fiscal note for the establishment of the Healthcare Affordability Board.
And Madam Chair, the bill then still balances as it did on Wednesday to a net general fund expenditure of $700 million in 22-23 and $1.2 billion in 24-25. That has not changed. And that's the sum of the changes, Madam Chair.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Question, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just for Representative Berg. So the total spending over a two-year period, if I understand correctly, is just about $2 billion?
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, that's correct. It's $1.9 billion over 3 years, 23, 24, and 25.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much to all of our nonpartisan staff. You can see that they, all of them, continue working. And you can see here that the FISC staff and the House research staff have continued to do a great deal of work, even as we get to this inflection point. So we're going to take up other amendments now. So the next amendment we're going to take up is the A1-1 amendment. Representative Damas, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A1-1 amendment.
Okay, do you want to explain the amendment?
I will, and I would also like to request a roll call, Madam Chair.
Okay, roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, yesterday we heard from two chief nursing officers about their concerns with the proposed mandatory hospital staffing committees and the negative impact this would have on their ability to provide patient care, particularly their inability to be innovative and have flexibility to move staff around between hospital units based on the patient need and the experience level of nurses. The language moves staffing decisions away from nurse management to a committee, which may not have the expertise to look at all hospital operations or know the availability of other care team members. There are two key provisions in the bill language that are of most concern. On line 40.2, the language reads, the maximum number of patients on each inpatient care unit for whom a direct care registered nurse can be assigned. This is a nurse to patient staffing ratio. And then on line 43.8, the language reads, a hospital must implement the core staffing plans approved by a majority vote of the hospital nurse staffing committee. This is a mandate on hospitals and restricts a hospital's ability to adjust staffing based on patient need and nurse experience. So my amendment simply deletes the provisions mandating the hospital nurse staffing committee and the various requirements associated with that mandate. But I want to be clear, this amendment keeps the Minnesota Department of Health's nursing workforce report found on page 94. It also keeps the $5 million for nurse loan forgiveness, and it keeps the $1 million for mental health grants for healthcare workers. So that is my amendment, Madam Chair. And again, I would like to request that roll call.
Yeah, it's been requested. Representative Grinhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I would just speak in favor of Representative Demus' amendment. You know, I was a certified, I was in charge of the a chief negotiator for the certified staff and a few other areas when I was on the school board. And one of the things we were repeatedly told by the Minnesota School Board Association legal department, do not negotiate away your supervisory rights, okay? And what we're doing here, it appears we're legislating away the supervisory rights of the hospital on a one-size-fits-all. So I think this is a bad direction to go. I do think some of the concerns of nurses are should be heard. And there is some that Representative Damuth left in with her amendment. But I think to do a one-size-fits-all all across the hospital association, as Mary Krenke testified, would be detrimental to patient care and cause additional problems in the system. Thank you.
All right, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to add that, you know, Mayo Clinic and other facilities that handle very complex cases, every person that comes in with a certain condition is not identical. And frankly, a lot of the patients Mayo sees have been admitted and they've been referred and et cetera, so that they're more of a challenge, but not everyone in a ward has that degree. So I think Mayo has a very robust understanding of the individual specific load in a ward, depending on the individual specific cases in that ward. And I think that this would make it cumbersome to have them generalize, and I think it'd be a loss to the effectiveness and efficiency. So the intent is understandable, but when you actually put it into practice, I think it would cause many problems with you know, different hospitals across the state. So I would support this amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would urge members not to support this amendment. I think it is really important for nurses at the bedside, and having at one time been one of those nurses and know what this looks like in practice. I think it's really important for those nurses at the bedside to have a say and to have input and to be at the table to make decisions about staffing and what are the needs of their patients, because they know those needs best. And so what this bill isn't is a strict ratio bill. It doesn't have that in the language. That's not what this is about. It's about having nurses at the table to be part of those conversations and part of those decisions. And I think that's really important. So I appreciate this language and would ask members again to not support this amendment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, members. So I'm just going to make a comment and we're going to take the vote. So I'm going to also ask members to vote no on the amendment. First of all, the version of the bill that is in the omnibus is significantly different than it was when we heard it in committee. And there's been a lot of effort on the part of the advocates for it to work with the other side. And they pretty much hit a stone wall, I have, as far as I've been told. Nurses went through hell during the pandemic, and we ask an awful lot of them. And we've heard them say again and again that they don't feel listened to. So this bill may not be perfect, but I think that it is, you can't say, well, we support our nurses and say, we're not going to do anything about it except whatever the hospitals say they're doing. That's just not acceptable. So I think that we need to vote down this amendment and then move on. So, you know, Representative Grinhagen, you did speak on the amendment already, and I said that I was going to say the final word, and then we were going to vote on the amendment. So actually, I'm going to just let, since the author of the amendment usually gets the final word, I'm going to go to Representative Damuth, and then we'll go to a vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to be clear that this amendment is not intended in any way to be disrespectful or not taking into consideration those nurses and those in the healthcare, those that are working in healthcare, what they have gone through over the last 2 years. In no way is that meant to be disrespectful. But I do believe when we do take into consideration going forward, the needs of a patient, and then the expertise of our healthcare professionals and our nurses, that needs to come into this. So again, the things that this bill, or this amendment, I'm sorry, keeps in place, it does keep that Minnesota Department of Health's nursing workforce report. That's an important thing to keep in place. And then also the financial components. I do appreciate the work that was done from what the bill was to where we are now, and I appreciate that, but I would encourage members to please vote yes on this amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Ms. Niedernhofer, please take the roll. The chair votes no.
Liebling, no. Vice Chair Hewitt.
No.
Hewitt, no. Leach Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Representative Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, no.
Bolden, no. Representative Damuth.
Yes.
Damuth, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Freiberg votes no.
Freiberg, no. Representative Grünhagen.
Grünhagen, aye.
Grünhagen, aye. Representative Keel.
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, no.
Morrison, no. Representative Munson.
Munson, aye.
Munson, aye. Representative Pryor.
No.
Pryor, no. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam, aye. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, no.
Ryer, no. Representative Schultz.
Schultz, no.
Schultz, no. Representative Wolgamott. Oh. Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes.
I'm sorry, I can't, I missed that.
Votes aye.
Aye. Wolgamott, aye. There are 9 ayes and 10 nays.
There being 9 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Next amendment is the A10, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And basically this amendment, let me get my notes here, but it's an amendment requested by the department to for the EMT portion of the bill for the fuel escalator that basically just allows the plans to also abide by the legislation.
Okay, and Representative Hewitt, we have to officially move the A10. So Representative Hewitt is moving the A10 amendment for adoption. Are there questions to the amendment or discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A10, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A10 is adopted. Okay, next we will take up the A7 amendment. Representative Ryer, did you care to move the A7?
Yes, I'd like to move the A7 amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay, please explain your amendment.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This amendment is a technical change to a bill that modified some reporting about dental utilization. We put the reporting in place last year, but we did not have requiring the number of dentists who were participating in Medicaid to be counted in the report. The original bill this year required county level reporting, and in looking at the data, DHS requested that we make it congressional district level so that there wouldn't be privacy issues for counties with fewer, with not very many dentists.
Okay, are there questions to the amendment, the A7? All right, seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A7 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A7 amendment is adopted. Let's move now to the A12 amendment. Representative Pryor, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, so moved, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. So the A12 is before us. Representative Pryor, please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is really a technical amendment that tries to get back into statute the original intent. What it does is people with disabilities who are appealing and a Social Security disability insurance denial, and they're seeking a fee waiver to access their health records. They don't need to both prove receipt of public assistance and representation by a volunteer attorney. It's just one or the other. And that was the original intent of the legislation, and this makes that correction.
All right. Thank you, Representative Pryor. Is there any other questions to the amendment? Okay, not seeing any questions. So all in favor of adoption of the A12 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A12 is adopted. Let's go next to the A16 amendment. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Like to move that?
I'd like to move the A16 amendment, please.
All right. So the A16 is before us. Please explain the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment pertains to the bill that provides broader access for diagnosis of rare diseases or undiagnosed diseases that have been hard to achieve a diagnosis on for children. The goal of the amendment is to clarify the definition of rare disease further and to narrow the criteria so that we aren't opening too broad, that we have a calibrated and effective definition to help these families. We're working through this wording with the Department of Health, and I think we are achieving a good definition. That's the bill, the amendment.
All right. Are there questions to the amendment? Discussion. Okay, not seeing any. So all in favor of adoption of the A16 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Let's go now to the A17 amendment. Representative Morrison, did you want to move the A17?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move the A17.
All right. The A17 is before us. To your amendment, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment is a bill that we've already heard in committee, so I will be brief. It will allow women to receive long-acting reversible contraception, such as intrauterine devices or subdermal contraceptive implants, in an inpatient setting immediately postpartum. To ensure that happens, the amendment asks the Commissioner of DHS to provide separate reimbursement to hospitals for LARC provided immediately postpartum in the hospital inpatient setting in the same way that occurs, for example, for permanent sterilization.
Okay, discussion. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Morrison. This is an incredibly good bill. And it really gives patients and new mothers the option to space out those kiddos in between to have healthier moms and healthier babies. And really, it's my understanding that we've been able to solve this problem in almost 43 states. Minnesota is a bit of an outlier on this issue, and so I hope that we can support this amendment.
Right. Thank you, Representative Bonner. And my understanding is, I think we just missed this one. This was originally intended to be in the bill, and it was one of those items that just, for whatever reason, we thought it was there and it wasn't there. So any further discussion to the A-17 amendment? Okay. All right, then, all in favor of the A-17, Representative Morrison, I thought, did you want a roll call on this or not? I don't want to miss it if you did.
Sure, Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Okay, all right, well, then the clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes aye.
Liebling, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt.
Aye.
Hewitt, aye. Lead Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, no.
Ackland, no. Representative Backer.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Damuth.
Damuth, aye.
Damuth, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Freiberg votes yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Grunhagen.
Grunhagen, no.
Grunhagen, no. Representative Keel.
Keel, no.
Keel, no. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Munson.
Munson, no.
Munson, no. Representative Pryor.
Pryor, aye.
Pryor, aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam, no. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. Representative Schultz.
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Wolgamott. Representative Wolgamott.
I think he's having connection problems. I can see he was trying to speak and he's there. Representative Wolgamott, are you able to? Okay, we're not hearing you, Representative Wolgamott. Okay. Go ahead and do the total. We'll mark Representative Wolgamott excused. Unfortunately, that's happening, and it's even happening in my office today, so.
There are 11 ayes and 7 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and the amendment, the A-17, is adopted. Okay, next bill, the next amendment is the A-14. Representative Grunhagen, did you want to move the A-14?
Oh, yes, Madam Chair, and I would like a roll call.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen moves the A-14 amendment, and there will be a roll call. Representative Grunhagen, to your amendment.
Yeah, it talks about the expansion of Minnesota Care, and of course, leading to a public option. It deletes sections 41 through 46 and also 247 through 249. We've been over this on the House floor, so I won't belabor the point, Chair Liebling. but I would draw people, and Patrick did send this out. There's a recent NPR article, and it says the first public option health plan in the U.S. struggles to gain traction, and it talks about Washington State. And I'll just pick out a couple snippets from the article for members to consider with this public, with the expansion of Minnesota Care, a public option. 2 years ago, the plans were implemented in the state of Washington. 25 of the state's 39 counties are participating. Enrollment numbers have been underwhelming, and state leaders blame hospitals. The plans had a hard time getting networks put together because of the hospitals won't play. Then a couple other comments. They noted that the public option relies on cutting payments to hospitals to control costs, which is what we would do with this, and ties reimbursement to Medicare rates, not Medicaid, which would even be worse. which don't cover hospitals' cost of providing care. It goes on to say, over time, it would create financial challenges, especially for small rural providers operating on thin margins. So what you're going to see, you're going to see hospitals closing, just like we've seen under Obamacare. And that's going to create less access and less care, not only for ourselves, but also for your children and grandchildren. Colorado and Nevada are looking at it, along with Connecticut, Oregon, New Jersey, and New Mexico, according to this article. But what they've learned is they cannot make a public option optional for hospitals because the networks suffer. So they're looking at forcing hospitals to participate in this. Government mandates. Finally, I can skip that part. So members, it basically reinforces almost everything I said on the House floor concerning the public option. And the direction you're going is to restrict access, see hospitals and fewer doctors and less access for the people of the state of Minnesota, especially your own children and grandchildren. It's a bad idea. And members, I would encourage a yes vote to eliminate moving that direction from the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. I will just respond by saying the, quote, public option that's in the bill is our bridge to somewhere. It is a much cheaper option than spending over $1 billion on reinsurance for the health plans. Minnesota Care, the public option would take advantage of Minnesota Care, a bipartisan program created over 30 years with great success and popularity. Minnesota is not Washington State. We are unique, and we've shown that we can run a successful program. And it has a very broad set of providers and network, and hospitals and clinics are much happier to take payments through Minnesota Care and private health plans, which operate Minnesota Care, than to have uncompensated care. And finally, I don't know why there's so much resistance to providing access to health care for a few thousand more people in Minnesota. I don't know why there's so much resistance among Republicans to do that. Everyone should have access to health care. And this buy-in, they're buying, we're allowing them to buy in and pay the premiums into Minnesota Care. I don't know. I don't understand why Republicans are against that. We can cover everyone in Minnesota, and we can provide the subsidies, and we should do so.
All right. Thank you, Representative Schultz. I'm going to make just a brief comment, and then I'm going to let Representative Grunhagen, the author of the amendment, have the final word before we vote. So I just want to respond to one small piece of the constant refrain that we've heard throughout this session and previous sessions about Obamacare closing hospitals. That's 100% wrong. Actually, hospitals in states that did not expand Medicaid closed at much, much higher rates. Rural hospitals closed. Obamacare actually helped hospitals stay afloat. So that's just 100% wrong. I just want to correct that statement. And then I'm going to let Representative Grunhagen have a brief final word, and then we'll go to a vote. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you for giving me the final comment, Chair Liebling. I do appreciate that. I would just disagree 100% with what you just said, but I won't be, okay? I do it respectfully, but you're 100% wrong, unfortunately. The other thing, Representative Schultz said it's a bridge to nowhere. Members, we need to go a direction. The direction is towards the private sector. My bill, reference-based pricing, would address access and reimburse doctors and hospitals higher. That's the bridge to go to, not the bridge to socialism and Marxism with government-run healthcare. That's the problem, Representative Schultz. You and I agree people need access to healthcare. The problem is we disagree on the solution. You want to take a socialistic and Marxist approach, which is going to ruin and cripple our healthcare system. So members, please vote yes on this, and let's go the direction that actually works rather than in the private sector, rather than the direction of more government, which is ruining health care.
All right. So Representative Grunhagen, since Representative Grunhagen invoked by name Representative Schultz and called, essentially throwing name calling around, I would say, I'm going to go to Representative Schultz, and then hopefully we can get to a vote soon. Representative Schultz.
Well, first of all, we are using private markets in this Minnesota care buy-in. We are using private health plans, private hospitals, private clinics to provide care. We are using private markets. This is competition. These are private markets. I'm an economist. I understand how this works. We are providing subsidies to low-income families, low-income households, so they can access health care. We can get to covering everyone in Minnesota if we do this. And I'll remind everyone that they voted, Republicans voted in the Senate to support fixing the family glitch, which is extending coverage in Minnesota care to more families who don't have affordable employer health insurance coverage. So we've already taken that first step. And this is just opening it up Minnesota care to those who are uninsured, and we can cover everyone. We are so close to that goal. I really hope Republicans can join us, but this is using private markets to solve this problem.
All right, thank you. So Ms. Niedernhofer, please take the roll. The chair votes no.
Liebling, no. Vice Chair Hewitt.
No.
Hewitt, no. Leach Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, yes.
Ackland, aye. Representative Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Representative Damuth.
Damuth, aye.
Damuth, aye. Did I miss Representative Bolden?
You did. Bolden, no.
Bolden, no. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Bolden, no. And Damuth, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Freiberg votes no.
Freiberg, no. Representative Grunhagen.
Grunhagen, aye.
Grunhagen, aye. Representative Keel.
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, no.
Morrison, no. Representative Munson.
Munson, aye.
Munson, aye. Representative Pryor.
Pryor, no.
Pryor, no. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam, aye. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, no.
Ryer, no. Representative Schultz.
Schultz, no.
Schultz, no. Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, no.
Wolgamott, no. There are 8 ayes and 11 nays.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Next amendment is the A15-1. Representative Grunhagen, did you want to move your amendment?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair.
All right. The A15-1 is before us, and to your amendment.
Well, basically what the amendment does, it deletes on page 34, section 23, and on page 437, sections 19-26. They deal with going back to your birth certificate and changing your sex on your birth certificate. Now, members, we've been over this a little bit before. This is anti-science and anti-biology. It's, you know, it's just based upon feelings. Now, I know former transgenders. I know about 5 of them. They all have regrets going down a path of mutilation and trying to change their sex. And some of them, one of them in particular is a lady who was a transgender for 34 years. And she tried to be a man, and she went back to being a woman. And she has not, in fact, she testified at the preventative health plan. So members, let's base our laws and regulations on science and biology. Let's not be anti-science and anti-biology based on feelings, which has no basis in verifiable science and biology. So please vote yes to eliminate this provision. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, first of all, I think the suggestion that a person is
transgendered based on feelings is offensive, but I won't even dwell on that here. The language in the bill that this amendment would remove is nothing radical. There are 47 states that have processes for changing the sex information listed on the birth certificate. And that can happen for a variety of reasons. It can happen because there was a mistake on the original birth certificate. Minnesota has a process in place to change birth certificates, but the current statutory basis in section 144.218 has created confusion in courts at the Department of Health and among the public and the lawyers representing people going through this process. So the law, I'm just looking at it here on another monitor, it says that if a court finds that a birth record is incomplete, inaccurate, or false, or if it is being issued pursuant to a different section, the court may order the registration of a replacement vital record and, if necessary, set forth the correct information in the order. So there's already a process in law, but it is big. A question arises and it has arisen, I know, in several court proceedings, like, does the certificate under this provision need to have been incomplete, inaccurate, or false when it was created, or is it sufficient that it is now? You know, the questions about what happens when a Minnesotan needs an order to change a record from another state. So the language I know that Representative Hollins had that we considered that's in this bill that this amendment would delete, it's lifted from the name change statute in Chapter 259, which is relevant considering how often name change requests and gender requests are made simultaneously. Approving this amendment to remove the language would not stop changes from occurring. It would simply mean that the courts and the Department of Health and everyone else would still be trying to make a flawed statute work as best as it can with the ambiguities and the gaps that it has in it. So I would encourage members to vote no on this amendment.
All right, Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to make some comments here. One, I think there is some ambiguity in this. If a person is choosing to change the sex on their birth certificate based on their decision and choice to become a transgender, that change from a sex of male or female to the opposite would not coincide with their actual biological sex. And I could see that at some point this could create a lot of confusion. For instance, if somebody is, there was a tragedy of some sort or a disaster of some sort, and we're trying to identify people. And a lot of times that's based on their DNA. And their birth certificate would say had been changed to the opposite sex, it wouldn't match. So I feel like the birth certificate should actually reflect your biological sex. To me, that is just the science behind it. It would, it's not confusing, and it would just be the reasonable common sense thing that your biological sex doesn't change based on your choices. By the same token, just for instance, I have blue eyes. I can wear brown contacts, but it doesn't mean my eyes are brown. My eyes are still blue. And so I think the birth certificate should reflect the actual biological sex of the person. And that if there is a need to change because it has, as Representative Freiberg suggested, there could have been a mistake from the beginning or maybe it was left off. Those things need to be addressed and should be addressed appropriately. But to change the sex on a certificate from what your biological sex is to something different than that, I think would actually open us up to a lot of problems down the road. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you. So I just would like to make a few comments here as well. Oh, well, Representative Breyer, I'll let you go first. Representative Breyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am not going to speak to the legalities or the processes because I think that that has been well covered by my colleagues in the DFL, and I think that it's a clear and useful piece of legislation. What I want to address is the marginalization and the lack of understanding of what people who are transgender are experiencing and go through. They don't become transgender. This is an expression of the individuals finding alignment between their inner self and their outer self. And I think we need to honor that. We need to protect people who are going through that, because I've read a lot about this and I've talked to a lot of people, and it's, you know, it's not something that one would choose cavalierly. It's a deep, profound expression of selfness. And I just wanted to go on record and have that be clear, and to have our transgender community here in Minnesota know that we see you, we hear you, and we value you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. So I would just add to this, first of all, going back to what Chair Freiberg laid out so nicely, this language that's in the bill right now actually doesn't even say transgender or anything about that. There are times when the gender is left off a birth certificate. There are times when, believe it or not, people are born intersex. I believe that some generations back in my own family, there was a person born intersex. So there are certainly times, and in current Minnesota law, it is certainly possible to get your sex changed on a birth certificate. It's just a pretty random process that isn't well set out in statute. So all this language does is to make that process a little more regularized. It doesn't allow it, something that isn't currently allowed, or disallow something that's currently, it doesn't change whether you could do it. In other words, it's just making it a more regular, understandable process so everyone knows what the ground rules are there. But then I also do want to speak to the sort of the underlying thing that's being messaged here, because I have heard this a lot, especially from Representative Grinhagen. And Representative Grinhagen, I know you don't mean to hurt anyone. I know you're a good person, and you are a very friendly person, and you like to believe that you are helping and supporting everyone. But I'm telling you that, just like Representative Ryer said, people don't choose to be transgender. Why in the world would anyone choose to be something that would subject them to misunderstanding, confusion, ridicule, hatred, discrimination? Why would someone choose that unless they felt a really compelling inner, that they felt that that was absolutely necessary? So I think it's very hurtful when you talk about this as though it's just somebody's choice, and, oh, it's, they don't do it for fun, Representative Grinhagen. Representative Ackland, you said something about a decision and choice to become a transgender. First of all, there's no such thing as a transgender. We're talking about people here. We're talking about, it's not a decision. It's not a lifestyle choice. This is something that, you know, I personally have never felt gender dysphoria myself, but that doesn't mean that I don't absolutely believe and understand that some other people do. And I have to honor their experience, because I'm never going to have that experience probably, but some other people are. And I think for us to talk about it this way, as though it's a frivolous thing that people are doing, I mean, we know that the incidence of suicide in people who are transgender is very, very high. Mm-hmm. And why is that? You know, I think a lot of it is because of the way the world treats people. For goodness sakes, you're outcast. People, you know, for some of them, people stare at them. They are treated in a really horrible way often. And that is just not a small thing. These are people's children. Sometimes they're parents. These are our loved ones. It's relatively rare. But when it happens, they deserve every consideration as every other human being. And so I hope we can stop talking about people in this really, what sounds like a really callous way that I know you don't mean, Representative Grinhagen. And this is a little bit off of the amendment itself, which really doesn't even deal with this, frankly. And I'm going to ask members to vote no. And I'm going to give Representative Grinhagen the final word. But please, you know, realize you're talking about human beings for whom this is a fundamental issue about who they are. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I would just respond a couple ways. I know they're human beings. I did 13 years of jail ministry on a voluntary basis. I've helped out more people hurting and having problems. I'll put my record up against anyone on a voluntary basis, and I wasn't paid for it, okay? You want to sit down and do that sometime. I do care about them. That's why the American Psychological Association calls the condition of transgenderism gender dysphoria. They need treatment to accept their biological sex. That's what's helping them. It's not patting them on the back and tell them to go down a path of mutilating surgery and a number of other problems, including they're not going to be able to reproduce out of many of these surgeries. So the other thing is, again, the American Psychological Association in the past has called it gender dysphoria. They need our help, and that's what we need to give them to accept their biological sex. Just like any other problem behavior, they need to, alcoholism or whatever, patting people on the back and sending them down that path is not compassion. It's miscompassion. It's helping them understand the truth and especially accepting the biological sex that they are. We already have in statute that if there's a mistake on a birth certificate, it can be fixed. That's already in statute. What this is opening a can of worms that are going to lead us down a path of confusion for our children and, in many cases, severe depression because they go down this path because society says it puts a green light to it. And like I said, the suicide rate is high. And I think part of it is because society is giving them a green light down there. So members, if you care about people and human beings, vote yes to eliminate this from the HHS budget. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. With that, I'm going to
roll call.
A roll call has been requested. And yeah, we're going to take a roll call. And just to remind members, the bill, it just regularizes a process that's there for everyone. It doesn't change whether you can get this done or not. Ms. Niedenhofer, please take the roll. The chair votes no.
Liebling, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Hewitt, no. Lead Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Ackland?
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Representative Backer?
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Bierman?
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Representative Bolden?
Bolden, no.
Bolden, no. Representative Damuth?
Damuth, aye.
Damuth, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Freiberg, no.
Freiberg, no. Representative Grunhagen?
Grunhagen, aye.
Grunhagen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Morrison?
Morrison, no.
Morrison, no. Representative Munson?
Munson, aye.
Munson, aye. Representative Pryor?
Pryor, no.
Pryor, no. Representative Quam?
Aye.
Quam, aye. Representative Ryer?
Ryer, no.
Ryer, no. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, no.
Schultz, no. Representative Wolgamott?
Wolgamott, no.
Wolgamott, no. There are 8 ayes and 11 nays.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. The final amendment is the A13 amendment. Representative Grunhagen?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that amendment.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen moves the A13 amendment. Do you care to discuss the amendment or explain the amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, it deletes Article 6 in the HHS budget. It deals with prescription drugs. And I'll start with a letter from NFIB. NFIB represents over 10,000 small businesses, small and mid-sized businesses across the state with 10 or more employees. And I'll just state one of their concerns. They said, in particular, Article 6 imposes restrictions on employer-sponsored health plan design and provider networking that will make it even harder for small businesses to control costs. Networks that meet adequacy requirements are one of the few healthcare cost containment tools still available to small employers under state or federal law. And then it goes on with a number of other concerns about Article 6. I'll just give a brief overview of other concerns. You know, as far as the frozen formulary, it freezes the retailer, but it doesn't freeze the manufacturer changes. So the retailer is stuck with the price, and the manufacturer can increase the price to the retailer. I mean, this is just a good way to put people out of business. Secondly, the excessive price increase for generic or outpatient drugs is an arbitrary price increase. You're going to have a group of people decide if the price went up too much. Then it goes on that it even it allows private citizens would be also empowered to bring legal action against certain pharmaceutical companies. And then if the pharmaceutical company decides to pull out, they could be penalized up to $25,000. So you know what you're going to get out of this. And then finally, I could go on, but I'll just make one final comment. You know, you have the Prescription Drug Affordability Board and Council, and I think you should rename it the Prescription Drug Unavailability and Unaffordable Board and Council, because that's what it's going to produce. You're just producing more bureaucracy. What you're going to get out of this, members, you're going to have fewer drugs available in the state of Minnesota, or manufacturers not offering the drug in the state of Minnesota just because of the consequences of if they have to pull out or change things. The result is Minnesota citizens are going to have to travel to different states to get their prescription drugs covered. Okay, I can see that happening. We did this with private health insurance. We passed laws that chased all the private health insurance companies out of the state, and now we're left with just a few whose executives make huge, and then we made them non-taxable, and their executives make huge multi-million dollar bonuses because of the lack of competition and the oversight of laws and regulations by the state of Minnesota. So, members, I could go on, but I think you get the gist. I happen to agree with the NFIB's assessment of Article 6, and I would ask for a yes vote.
All right, any further discussion? Representative Bonner.
Thanks so much for that. I guess I wanted to state I appreciate Representative Grunhagen that you have some thoughts on this, and certainly appreciate the concerns. But you know, I also want to state that we talk about things like competition. Right now the system is designed to suppress competition. Mm-hmm. That we're in a free market system, and yet we don't have the competition we need to keep those prices low and to pass those on to the consumer. And, you know, I'm all in favor of letting private businesses do their work. But when we can't get private businesses to intercede on their own behalf and do the right thing, that's when oftentimes folks turn to their legislators to step in and step up to make sure that their interests are represented, that consumers are getting what they need. And right now they're not. So it's really unfortunate that we've been put in a place where, as legislators, we are having to make really tough choices to put measures in place to regulate these items and ensure that competition can happen and that we can reduce prices. So for that reason, I would encourage members to vote no on this amendment and continue with the items that are in the bill. I think many of them have the potential to do a great deal of good.
All right, thank you, Representative Bonner. And so we're going to have a roll call on this amendment. So I'm asking for roll call myself and granting it. We're having a roll call.
Thank you.
So members, this amendment removes all of the drug provisions in the bill. I mean, I guess you can quibble about some of them. We could discuss them. The world of drug pricing is unbelievably complicated. I don't think it's accidental. There's a lot of profit being made, and all of it, whoever's fault it is, these different entities we've learned at the legislature, they all point fingers at each other. But the bottom line is that consumers are really getting hit, and they can't even get the drugs they need. You can go and visit your doctor. Your doctor can write a prescription. If you cannot get that prescription, that doctor visit might have been almost worthless. I mean, this is not only a big economic issue for people, it's also a health issue. It's also a real life and death issue. So, you know, to take out every single thing that we have in the bill to try to help our constituents control the price of drugs is just, I'm just amazed. Representative Grenier, and I really thought you were going to withdraw this amendment because it is so overbroad. It is just, you know, you want this bill to go forward without any attempt to help consumers control costs. And wow, that's all I can say. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And frankly, if we had had a open discussion instead of just one group pushing and including, then I think we could have had some consensus. Not once was a bill on pharmacogenomics allowed, which has been shown by a study in Kentucky by the teachers union on their members, a savings not only in medical costs, a savings in hospitalization, days in the hospital, emergency room visits, outpatient procedures, etc. There are wonderful things we could do, but this committee refused to even hear pharmacogenomics. And we've got great researchers and people working on it in this state. And that is the one way of, you. How do you cut medical costs? The main driver is medicine. You don't prescribe the wrong medicine to someone. You prescribe the right medicine. And we've got the technology and the science to be able to address that. So you save money, you save the harm that's caused by somebody taking a medication they are not, that they're going to have a problem with or is not going to be effective, so they don't improve, you know, quickly. A one-sided discussion brings about the fact that we can't move forward. And so, you know, yeah, it was a hammer in this amendment to say you've got problems in how you're implementing it, but to say that there aren't problems by avoiding good components that could have been put into here is the other side of the discussion. So if you want a roll call, fine, but I'd rather that we had worked together to move forward with some good things and build consensus, and then we would have it more likely to pass in the Senate. So posturing with all one way in a bill isn't going to solve our problems. So my frustration is showing through, but this is the last attempt until it goes to conference committee, and then a very few amount of people go back and forth, and what pops out, it's take it or leave it. And the frustration is with the process, because I think we're better than that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So I'm going to respond to that just briefly before I go to Representative Bierman. And first of all, I have to say, you know, we did hear your bill, Representative Quam, last year in March, House File 81, and it was for a task force. And I communicated to you later on during the summer that we needed to work on the language of the bill because it wasn't the underlying issue. It was the fact that the bill still needed work. And for whatever reason, you and I never got together to do that. I know Representative Bonner also talked to me about it, and this was your bill, and you never really came to me and tried to work on it. So there's that. So there is that. We did hear your bill. It just didn't move forward. You could have come back with it anytime.
Madam Chair, I did try to communicate with you, and you never scheduled an appointment, and there were three bills, not just one, three.
Well, Representative Quam, it's kind of on the member to make sure that, you know, that it gets communicated.
It's on the member to be ignored and not given an opportunity.
I'm sorry. I met with you. I told you I would meet with you to work
right,
on the
and,
language.
And we Representative asked tried to schedule.
You are out of order. You are out of order.
You are out of order. Okay, I'm out of order. Bye.
Representative Quam, you are out of order. So the bigger point is that members can bring whatever amendment they want into this process. And this is an amendment to delete every single prescription bill that we have. I understand that different members might have different concerns about one or another of them. They may not all get to the finish line. But to remove every single thing we're trying to do around prescription drug work from the bill, I just don't understand that at all. I'm going to go to Representative Bierman. Representative
Bierman. Thank you, Madam Chair, and just wanted to engage on this. As we all know, pharmaceuticals are approximately 20% of the total costs of our health care. We do need to address them, and Representative Bonner is absolutely correct. Our constituents are looking to us to do something, because to address this issue, if you look around the world at other countries and what is effective, there are reasons that pharmaceuticals are cheaper in every other country of the world. And that is, they have some sort of regulation on them. Some of these bills, which this amendment would take out, are trying to do. So if you want to address that high cost, if you want no change to the high cost of pharmaceuticals, then vote for this amendment. But if you want to see change, members, please do vote, because your constituents are counting on you to make change in this area, and that's why we're here. So, members, please vote no.
All right, we're going to go to the vote then. Ms. Niedenhofer, please take the roll, and the chair votes no.
Don't I get a final comment, Madam Chair?
Okay, you can have a final comment. I'm sorry, Representative Grunhagen. Go ahead. I thought everything had been said that needed to be said, but go ahead.
There's a lot more that could be said, but I'll keep it short. I just want to remind members, the overall theme of this section is to hurt small business and small businesses' ability to offer health insurance to their employees, which we're concerned about, but unfortunately. The major problem with healthcare costs and prescription drug costs, which we all agree are out of control, is government regulations, government laws, and government subsidies. Those are the three things that are screwing up the system, okay? I mean, in Minnesota, we chased out the competition in healthcare with the Minnesota Care Law. We made it difficult for any other private company to operate in the state. So now we've got just a three few running the whole thing and making themselves rich, the executives. That wasn't the market, that was government. At the federal, the best thing to do on this is to address some of the concerns at the federal level, which President Trump was trying to do. Why it was so much cheaper in foreign countries than it is in the United States. It's just as if we're bailing out foreign countries on their prescription drugs with higher costs. And to say I don't have empathy, okay, when I've sold health insurance since 1978, and I've had people crying in my office and at the table because of the cost of prescription drugs, it is one of my key concerns. But consider, members, until Obamacare was passed, we weren't talking about PBMs. We weren't talking about a lot of these skyrocketing costs. Sure, there were concerns, but Obamacare threw gasoline on the subject with the laws and regulations, just like it drove up our deductibles and our healthcare premiums exponentially. Remember, in front of HHS, and this will be my last comment, we had a presentation by a study in 2017, 7 years after Obamacare was passed, that 1.3 million Minnesotans did not access the health care they needed, not that they wanted or they desired, that they needed, because of high deductibles and high premiums. That's where government involvement is taking us. It's down. Does government needs to be a referee? The problem with the way we're going, we want to get, you know, if this was a football game, we want the referee to go into government, into the huddle and call the plays, okay? That doesn't work. It has never worked, and it won't work here. It's going to damage your access to health care. It's going to continue to increase costs, and we're going to cripple and damage one of the best health care systems in the world. So please vote yes.
Ms. Niedenhofer, please take the roll. The chair votes no.
Liebling, no. Vice Chair Hewitt.
Hewitt, no.
Hewitt, no. Lead Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Eklund.
Eklund, aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, no.
Bolden, no. Representative Damuth.
Damuth, aye.
Damuth, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Freiberg, no.
Freiberg, no. Representative Grünhagen.
Grünhagen, aye.
Grünhagen, aye. Representative Kiel.
Kiel, aye.
Kiel, aye. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, no.
Morrison, no. Representative Munson.
Munson, aye.
Munson, aye. Representative Pryor. Representative Pryor.
Pryor, aye.
Pryor, oh, aye.
Aye? Okay.
Aye. Representative Quam.
I mean, oh.
Representative Pryor. Representative Pryor?
You're muted.
Pryor, no.
Pryor, no. Representative Quam. Representative Quam. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, no.
Ryer, no. Representative Schultz.
Schultz, no.
Schultz, no. Representative Wolgamott.
No. Wolgamott, no.
Wolgamott, no. Representative Quam. There are 7 ayes and 11 nays.
There being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. So let's see. I think that is the end of our filed amendments. And so we are on final passage of the bill. And so is there discussion to the bill as amended? And Representative Grünhagen, I'm going to call on you, but I would just ask you in the interest of time to please not repeat again the comments that you just made. Representative Grünhagen.
Well, I thought maybe you missed something. No, I'm just kidding, Madam Chair. No, I won't repeat those. I would just remind members that last session, between the House and the Senate, we passed an increase of over 20%, according to staff, in our HHS budget, okay? We are now number 2 and looking at going to become number 1 in our public welfare benefits. Members, we are on a path, according to a former state demographer who's supposed to be nonpartisan, that said if you don't get the growth of government health care and benefits under control, there will be, at some point in the future, there will be no additional money for roads or bridges, K-12 or higher ed. And we are on a path to draw in the dependent. And let me just give you a quick example from a delegate I just talked to this weekend. He owns rental property in Hutchison. And he has people from Detroit and Chicago, low-income people, coming to Minnesota renting his apartments. He normally charges $1,000. They're offering him $1,200 to rent from him under Section 8. And then they keep the difference of their voucher for food stamps and for SNAP benefits or whatever from there. So we're drawing in the dependent, and according to the statistics at the Center for American Experiment, we're chasing out the most successful. They're changing their residences, they're leaving this state and not paying taxes in it anymore. We are headed in a formula of over another $2 billion in a biennium on top of what we passed last year. And some of there's some good things in here, Madam Chair, but the overall concern is we are spending at a rate that is not sustainable. And you're drawing in the dependent, which we need legal immigration, but we need immigration that allows them to become part of the middle class, not permanently on their knees, dependent on government. So members, I would strongly urge that if you care about the future of this state for your children and grandchildren, that we send a clear message on this bill, enough is enough, okay? And vote no. Thank you, Madam Chair. I try not to repeat myself.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Any other comments from members before we take the roll? Representative Schumacher.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just wrap up today for those who intend on voting no. I think this bill is probably... Well, I know you well enough to know that this bill is very true to how you see things and how you would approach making the world a better place, and I can appreciate that. There are some things we really do like about the bill as it is in parts in there, particularly the hospital moratorium exception pieces that were included in there. We're happy to see that. And the way that can expand and some of the other points that expand the mental health capacity pieces, very happy to see some of those things coming through, but we do have concerns with the approach in some of the other areas and the hospital staffing pieces and that we try to address in amendments today, as well as some of the pieces that are part of the health insurance fixes that you have in there. We do have concerns with one piece that I will just raise as kind of a question that I'll have to look into more as we move forward with that, but with the managed care opt-out piece, just looking at the fiscal note on that a little bit earlier today, and I need to dive in a little bit better and understand where some of the assumptions came in for the care coordination. I was interested to see, though, that in that fiscal note, one of the reports that they had referenced in order to get their fiscal note together was the 2020 Consumer Experience Survey report, which on page 9 of that shows that the consumer ratings for fee-for-service programs versus the managed care organizations for rating of the health plan and rating of all health care was actually lower than the satisfaction from those with the managed care organizations. And so that's one area I'm going to dive into a little bit more to try and understand where some of that's coming from. But as we move forward, we'll be happy to work with you on the parts that we can and agree to disagree on some of the others. So thank you again. I know it's a lot of work putting these things together, and I know you had quite a heavy lift again this year for this, and wish you the best of luck moving forward.
Thank you very much, Representative Schumacher. Other comments to the bill? So I'm going to really save most of my comments on the bill for the floor. This bill still has a ways to go. And I would just say, Representative Schumacher, I'm glad you're interested in that piece about letting people opt out of managed care in our public programs.
it is really astonishing. It's not astonishing, actually. I'm not surprised to see that it does save a lot of money. And, you know, we've been wedded to managed care in our public programs in the state for quite a few years, and we've never really evaluated or really been able to evaluate what benefit is really gained. But we do know that we spend an awful lot of money on it, and we as legislators know that we don't have very much control over it. And those are two things that really don't go together very well. So I think we all share the concern about making sure that every public dollar we spend goes to good use and goes to get the outcomes that we all are looking for our people. And this is an area that, as members know, I've been concerned about for many years, and I'm very pleased that the bill is able to take a little step forward and look forward to examining that topic, continuing to examine that topic and move forward on that. But there are many, many good things in this bill. It is the work of many, many people. And before I do the thank yous, I think we should go ahead and take the final vote on the bill. So I'm going to renew my motion that House File 4607, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and that staff be directed to make any technical and conforming changes necessary to match the spreadsheet and to make adjustments to reflect the adopted amendments. So with that, Ms. Niedernhofer, please take the roll, and the chair votes aye.
Liebling, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt. Vice Chair Hewitt. Leach Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, no.
Ackland, no. Representative Backer.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Damuth.
Damuth, no.
Damuth, no. Representative Freiberg.
Freiberg, yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Grunhagen.
Grunhagen, no.
Grunhagen, no. Representative Keel.
Keel, no.
Keel, no. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Munson.
Munson, no.
Munson, no. Representative Pryor.
Pryor, aye.
Pryor, aye. Representative Quam. Representative Quam. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. Representative Schultz.
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes aye.
Wolgamott, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt. Representative Quam. There are 10 ayes and 7 nays.
All right, there being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 4607 as amended is re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and staff is directed to make any technical and conforming changes necessary to match the spreadsheet and to make adjustments to reflect the adopted amendments. So, members, this, of course, is the last scheduled hearing of the year, and we may convene hearings on an as-needed basis. We've talked a lot about the incredible staff that we are so fortunate to have, and I just want to thank them again. There are so many people to thank. This is completely a team effort, and our nonpartisan staff, House Research, have done amazing work, and of course their work isn't over, but I do hope they're gonna get a break this week. Elizabeth Clark-Vest, Randy Chun, Danielle Punelli, Sarah Sunderman, and Annie Mock have been absolutely amazing. And I know that I only see a little piece of the work they do because I know they work for every member, and they do all the amendments, and they answer our questions, and they teach us the material, and they make us look better than we deserve, for sure. the reviser staff who are also doing amazing work for us, Alex, Willie, Dean Trefts, and Sandy Glasserani. They are amazing. Our House Fiscal staff, Doug Berg, who has been with us for so many years and just knows everything up and down, and Joe Harney, who is new with us this year. And honestly, I don't know how he learned everything he knows, because he's just been absolutely amazing. I hope he stays around, because he'll be scary after a few years here in terms of what he knows. He is really good. We know our partisan researchers do a great job for us. They make us all better. Joe Durheim and Jeremiah Wingstedt. And I don't know how you guys keep Jeremiah working, because I know he does a ton of work for you. I want to thank our commissioners, Commissioner Malcolm and Commissioner Harpstead. They are really great. I mean, I just don't know how we could do any better in terms of amazing, dedicated, smart, caring public servants. We have all of our agency staff, especially our staff led by Lisa Timian with the Department of Health and Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. And I know that all of us have reached out to them at different times, and they are just stores of knowledge. They manage to never lose their cool. I don't know how they do it, but we couldn't do this without them. Agency fiscal teams, including Elise Bailey and Char Kimber, and of course, especially our committee staff here, my staff, Kristen Niedernhofer, who's my CLA and just knows so much. She's been working for the House for many years. And Patrick McQuillan, who I just don't even know what to say. Patrick, does he sleep? I don't know. He works round the clock. He manages everything, keeps every ball in the air, and he's been doing it also while caring for his kids, which so many of us are doing now, multitasking in multi-dimensions. It's just been absolutely amazing. I also want to thank all of the members in both parties. It's really been a pleasure to work with you. I've really enjoyed having you on the committee, especially Lead Schumacher. Really is a very much a pleasure to work with you. And I know that you, as you said, I think we share a lot of the same goals. We just have different ways of getting there. And I know we've changed positions a couple of times. I know you understand what this job takes, and you're just a great partner. I really appreciate that. And Vice Chair Hewitt, I don't know if he dropped off the call, lost connection, whatever, but he's been a wonderful vice chair, wonderful help and support. Really appreciate his help. And of course, Chair Schultz, who I partnered with all the way along here. We got a ways to go before we get to the end, but just thank you so much to all of you. I do hope that Minnesotans, I think as Chair Schultz said this in her committee, but I hope Minnesotans understand the quality and the commitment of the people that they have working for them. Really, across the board, we are so fortunate. So with that, members.
Chair Liebling, I am so sorry I had to drop off, or I probably would have been pulled into security there. So okay. I just want to say, it's been an honor to serve with you. I would have been a yes vote on this if I could have done it. And thank you so much for instilling in me that great trust. And we still have a long way to go. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Okay. So with that, I think we will let everyone start their weekend. And I hope you all have a wonderful, refreshing break and a wonderful, refreshing, meaningful holiday, whatever holidays you are celebrating. And with that, we are adjourned.